My ears told me I had emerged from the top of the shaft. My hand pawed in the air but didn't find a next rung. Instead, the Trowan intercepted it, hauled me out, hauled back the other way to kill the momentum he had conferred on me, and guided me to something I could grab. I peeled up my blindfold and saw that I had emerged into the core. The ball valve leading to the aft bearing chamber was just a stone's throw behind us. Its length in the other direction was inestimable, but I knew it to be 2¼ miles. It was as I remembered it. Glowing tubes strung down its inner surface emitted filtered sunlight, and the conveyor belt ran endlessly with well-looped clicking and humming noises. 3 other well shafts were plumbed into the core at this nexus. The one directly above or opposite us led into Orb 4. It looked like a direct, straight-line continuation of the shaft we had just finished climbing. A ring ladder ran around the core wall, providing access to all of them. Those who were practiced at this kind of thing could simply jump across. There was a wait. To begin with, those below me on the ladder had to catch up. Moreover, a traffic jam had already developed in the shaft to Orb 4. There were safety rules governing how many were allowed to use the ladder at once, being enforced by a soldier stationed at the top rung. Some other delegation was going down ahead of us, though from our point of view they appeared to be ascending the ladder feet first, and we would have to wait until they had reached the bottom. So, Leo and I began screwing around. We decided to see if we could make ourselves motionless in the center of the core. The goal was to place oneself near the middle of the big tunnel while killing one's spin so that the whole ship would rotate around one's body. This had to be done through some combination of jumping off from the wall just so and then swimming in the air to make adjustments. Desperately clumsy would be a fair description of our first 5 minutes' efforts. From there we moved on to dangerously incompetent, as while flailing around, I kicked Leo in the face and gave him a bloody nose. The Trowan soldiers watched with mounting amusement. They couldn't understand a word we were saying, but they knew exactly what we were trying to do. After I kicked Leo, they took pity on us, or perhaps they were just scared that we'd get seriously hurt and they'd be blamed. One of them beckoned me over. He grabbed my cord in one hand and my bolt at the scruff of my neck at the other and gave me a gentle push combined with a little torque. When I swam to a halt in the middle of the tunnel, I saw I was closer than I had ever been to achieving the goal. Hearing voices in Fluckish, I looked up the core to see a contingent of perhaps 2 dozen coming to join us. Most were floating down the middle of the core instead of using the conveyors, so even if they hadn't been speaking Fluckish, I'd have known them for tourists. One of these suddenly bounded ahead of the group, drawing a rebuke from a soldier. Cord hand over handed her way along the tunnel wall and launched herself at me from 100 feet away. I feared the impending collision, but fortunately air resistance slowed her flight, so that when we banged bodies it was no more violent than walking into someone. We had a long zero-gravity hug. Another Arbran was not far behind her, a young secular man. I didn't recognize him, but I had the oddest feeling that I was expected to. He was slowly tumbling on all 3 axes as he drifted toward me and my sib, flailing his arms and legs as if that would help. For that, he was very impressively dressed and coiffed. One of our soldier escorts reached out and gave him a push on the knee that stopped his tumbling and slowed his trajectory to something not quite so meteoric. He came to a near stop with respect to me and Cord. Gazing at him past Cord's right ear, which was pressed so hard against my cheek that I was pretty sure her earrings were drawing blood, I saw him raise a spelecaptor and draw a bead on us. "In the chilly heart of the alien starship," he intoned in a beautifully modulated baritone, "a heartwarming reunion between brother and sister. Cord, the secular half of the heroic pair, shows profound relief as she—" I was just beginning to have some profound but not quite so heartwarming emotions of my own when the man with the spelecaptor was somehow, almost magically, replaced by Ulessitar Crade. Associated with the miracle were a few sound effects, a meaty thwomp and a sharp exhalation, a sort of bark from the man with the spelecaptor. Yule had simply launched himself at the guy from some distance away and body-checked him at full speed, stopping on a dime in midair as he transferred all of his energy into the target.
"Conservation of momentum," he announced. It's not just a good idea, it's the law.
Far away, I heard a thud and a squawk as the man with the hairdo impacted on the end cap. This was almost drowned out, though, by chuckling and what I took to be appreciative commentary from our soldier escorts. If I'd been startled at first to learn that Ulusatar Krayt had been made part of all things, a diplomatic legation, I saw the genius of it now.